Hey, everybody. Welcome to Roger and Me, a weekly movie review podcast tribute to Siskel and Ebert, hosted by myself, Brett Arnold, and fellow film critic Mark Dusick of MarkReviewsMovies.com. He's been there for decades upon decades reviewing movies. There's an archive. You can find them all. This week, there are 14 movies that Mark somehow managed to review. He kept posting them. I kept getting the Patreon alerts that Mark was logging movies that I've never heard of, just one after the other, after I had already watched 9 of them for this week. And at some point, I had to say, enough. I can't do this anymore. None of the ones you were logging sounded like they were worth my time. So I stuck with my 9. Mark did 14. What is this show? As I said up top, it's called Roger and Me, aka Roger Ebert and Me, because we are reviewing every new theatrical release, every new streaming release, every Friday in the format Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert pioneered. It's very simple. That's what we're doing. The name of the show made a lot more sense when I was going through the Siskel and Ebert at the movies archives, watching the episodes alongside you, the viewer and listener, and reevaluating the films from the 70s and 80s and 90s. That became cumbersome while also trying to review every movie that comes out every week. So we stuck with keeping it fresh and talking about all the new movies that came out. Mark, how did you end up watching 14? How did this happen?
I'm assuming some sort of psychological issue. I'm assuming
a mental break of some kind occurred.
Something has happened. Oh. Something has gone terribly wrong. But yeah, you didn't miss out on any of the ones that. Yeah, I think you picked the right 9. If you have
there's
to go
one
with the 9,
there's one I'll call out that I wish I did see, and that's appears to be a very long documentary about Ennio Morricone.
Yeah,
Ennio Morricone. I don't know how you pronounce that correctly, but
they pronounce it differently in the movie. So,
oh, good.
Yeah,
iconic composer, musician that you definitely know his music if you don't know the name. So that was good. And where is that playing? What's that about?
That is currently in New York. We might be able to cover it later. It's expanding over the next few weeks, but not big time. I think it hits digital rental / purchase in April. So.
Okay.
It's worthwhile. So maybe we get to it later, depending on how schedules for later go.
Oh yeah. Distributed by Music Box Films. And it really is 2.5 hours long, huh?
Yep.
All right. Also known as The Glance of Music. I don't know where that title for that movie took hold, but not in America. It's called Ennio. But anyway, 9 movies that we were talking about that we both saw. Go to markreviewsmovies.com for the straggler. 5, I guess.
Yeah,
so many. The biggest release of the week is Lisa Frankenstein. It's a movie written by Diablo Cody, directed by a first timer, whose name is Zelda Williams, and she is in fact Robin Williams's daughter. That's the biggest release of the week. But we also have a Wim Wenders film that is called Perfect Days. That was, you know, Oscar qualifying run last year, so we saw it in November, December, but it's not officially out until now. We'll talk about that. There's a movie that is basically Sundance incarnate that was at Sundance a few weeks ago that is now on Hulu today. There's a couple foreign things, or only one foreign thing, a few indie things. Why waste any more time? We should get into it. I will tease one more thing. End of the episode, we do have a big movie. Bob Marley, One Love. It's out next week, but we have both seen it, and the embargo drops today. So we're going to just go ahead and give you an early review of Bob Marley, One Love. And why don't you give us an early review or a late review, whatever. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube. Leave us a comment, except that one guy who leaves mean ones. You can stop at any point. That would be great. But that's fine. Let's get right into the show. The first movie is Lisa Frankenstein. Diablo Cody wrote it. Let's get into it.
Are you hot burning?
Lisa! Does he have more of a basketball bod or a football bod?
He doesn't play sports. I tend his grave. I talk to him. I wish I was with you.
That's really weird, Lisa.
You hear that?
I'm sure it's the girl next door. She's very odd.
This is a movie that seems tailor-made for me in a lot of ways. I do enjoy Diablo Cody, even though I'm not big on the horror thing that she is most famous for, Jennifer's Body. That's the horror thing she's most famous for. The most thing she's most famous for is writing Juno, obviously. Big fan of all of her Jason Reitman collabs. Like, I'm a fan of hers. I was looking forward to this, another horror thing from her, and I found it, I didn't dislike it as much as you did, Mark, but it's definitely messy and stilted and tonally confused and just completely lacks narrative momentum. It just feels like a series of scenes, one after the other. It's very, you never get a feel for the characters or the sense of like storytelling, rather than like, it feels like a bunch of scenes. I don't know how to say it any better than that. I was very confused by it, even though I did laugh a few times because I do find Diablo Cody to be a fun writer. But I think the first time directorness really hurt this one. And I'm very fascinated to hear what you have to say about it.
I'm about at the same point where you are. It does feel like a sequence of scenes with different ideas too on top of it. It's not just that it's, you know, throwing out jokes here and there. It's like coming up with the plot as it's going. And the main character changes with every development that happens. It's so weird to watch that. I never quite understood how she goes from this quiet teen who's traumatized, by the way, because that's the way things have to go,
yes,
to being confident, gothy girl in school. There's never a point where you understand, like, why did that happen? What is that marker? It's just that she has to be that way so that the movie can eventually get to where the plot is, which is pseudo Heathers, I would say. It's not, it's nowhere close to Heathers, but
it's doing Heathers.
It's
doing Heathers. It's very much trying to be Tim Burton-y, like Edward Scissorhands, suburbia, satire, whatever you want to call that. It's doing all that. It's definitely wearing its influences on its sleeve, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. It's just, I don't know what I could even say this movie is. I'm like, I guess it's a comedy, but there definitely are some big horror swings, but they happen at strange moments and feel like they're disjointed and out of a completely different movie. The big like denouement moment that happens, that's like a big shock laugh, just really didn't work for me at all. I really like the lead, Catherine Newton, who we've seen in Freaky, that horror movie that was like, what if Freaky Friday, but serial killer. She was also in Blockers, which is a great comedy. She was in Detective Pikachu. You might have seen her in some of these things. I just really wanted to like this, but it's so hard to get a grasp on that, you know, I'm laughing at like Carla Gugino being like the worst person you've ever seen as the evil stepmother type of stuff. But it's hard to root for anybody in this. It's, as much as I like Catherine Newton, you're right, her character just morphs as the movie needs her to in ways that don't really make sense. It just feels like a huge missed opportunity at every point. And it just feels like there's a lot of dead air. I'm sure, I know there is a score, like I've seen the composed by credit, but it feels like there's a lot of dead air and like not a lot of music punctuating it at the right points. It just felt very amateurish to me. Like it needed like a second run through in the edit room or something. Did it come off that way?
It needed something there, or even in the screenplay, because there are plot threads. There are whole threads that kind of go nowhere. Newton's character is introduced as, like I said, being traumatized by a masked killer that breaks into her home and kills her mother. And the killer's never, you think this is something that's going to come up later. It has to, right? But it doesn't. It's just tossed in there for some reason. It's not played as a joke. It's not played as the sort of self-aware, we're in the 80s, so of course there's a mass slasher going around. It's not, none of that's played. It's just,
yeah, it's all just like so broad. Weird. It's like,
yeah, it's, I don't understand jokes. why that's there. Who's the actor? Cole Sprouse plays be resurrected. We didn't even talk about the plot. Hang on. Yeah.
So yeah, she's, go ahead. All
right. She's this lonely girl whose parent mother has been murdered. Her father remarried. She wishes that some guy in a cemetery who died like a century ago could be with him, but it's a misunderstanding. That's all I'll say, but somehow magic happens and the guy resurrects, the corpse resurrects, and she has to hide him in her room. And that's kind of the plot.
Yeah. And there are some fun flourishes. Like basically he's a reanimated corpse that you keep using a tanning bed to like make him more and more human as the movie gets along.
I like that. That's a good bit.
There's so many good bits throughout. The fact that his tears smell terrible and he keeps crying around her and she like can't even handle it at all. Like there are some funny bits, and like it becomes this thing where they're like, she's reanimating him with body parts of other. It just, I feel like, again, we've seen this before. There's a movie called May. Have you seen that? Lucky McGee. There's a lot of movies similar to this. I would also be loath to mention, you know, you got to say it's like Weird Science in a lot of ways. Obviously, it's like Frankenstein in the title in a lot of ways. But yeah, I love the idea. I just wish it threaded the needle better, right? Like, I wish that the humor and the gory stuff and the darkness, the macabreness, it all added up to something instead of just like it felt like disparate tone things happening. And it was really tough to get anything out of. I would say the standout is Liza Soberano, who plays Taffy in the movie. Her sister, her like stepsister, I guess. She's really fun and like makes the Cody dialogue work. But like, it's also a performance that if you don't like Cody dialogue, you'll probably think it's stilted and not good. And like, stilted is a good word to use to describe the movie overall, as I probably already have said that. The pacing's just way fucking off. That's like really my main concern with it. And I walked away really wanting to like it because I laughed a few times at some of the bits. And like the idea of like, you know, I don't want to get into too many spoilers, but like you kind of have to if I want to praise it at all, because it's like she's almost sexually assaulted early on in the movie by like while she's drunk and like reclaiming that guy's hand and like using it. There's like something there in the path, like in that text, that's really powerful and interesting. I don't think the movie does anything with those big ideas about like woman, you know, reclaiming her femininity or whatever after an attempted rape on her or whatever. Like, it just doesn't sell any of the stuff it needs to sell to make it work, even though there are nuggets of interesting ideas in the movie.
The best ideas are near the end when it is sort of a kind of a revenge story eventually, but I think those are also neutered by the fact that it's a PG-13 horror movie that's trying for some really over the top violence, and it ends up being staged awkwardly. It doesn't work in terms of the joke. I mean, just the silhouette, that's all I'll say. There's a big graphic kill that happens, and the punchline is a silhouette instead of what they clearly wanted it to be.
Yeah,
and I'm just sitting there like thinking, instead of thinking like, does this joke work? I'm thinking, is the joke they wanted to do, if they had been able to do an R rating, would that have worked? So there's this level of distance when you can tell that they're kind of keeping things minimalized in terms of the violence and gore. Really doesn't work.
I have some insight here from an interview in IndieWire where Zelda Williams says, there's a hard R version on the editing room floor. It's what we shot, certainly. I'm grateful now in hindsight to have been able to thread that needle of finding a PG-13 version, because teenagers right now, not a lot of stuff is made for them, especially fun, kind of pushing the envelope stuff. This pushes PG-13 to a limit I think teenagers will enjoy. A lot of it is about self-love and finding love and hopefulness as well. And if it can be a little edgy so that they're entertained, blah, blah, blah. It makes sense that this movie was truncated from R to PG-13. And it really does hurt the movie. I don't think it being R-rated would save it, but it would make a lot of the problems, some of the problems go away. Not all the problems.
Yeah, so, especially in that third act, it would help because you would at least understand like, oh, they are really going for it. But again, I don't know for sure if they really did go for it until we actually see some sort of director's cut. But right now, it feels so weird watching.
It's a weird watch.
It does push the envelope. It does. But
sure,
why not? Why not just go for it then? I don't understand. I don't understand.
Yeah, some of that stuff. I was ultimately quite disappointed. So I'm ending up at 2 stars for Lisa Frankenstein, the latest from Diablo Cody, who hasn't written a script, in, as far as I can tell, a while.
It's been a bit.
Yeah.
This feels like something that might have been in a drawer sitting around and just kind of shaped as it needed to be, because I didn't see any form. I didn't see much function. I'm giving it 1.5. And yeah, I don't, it's got some funny moments, but it doesn't come together at all. I don't understand it. It's so strange.
Yeah, it is very strange. That's my main takeaway, is I was baffled. Like while watching it and after watching it, I'm like, why isn't this working? Because like, I like a lot. I like the look of the movie. Like, I know I said it's badly directed. Doesn't mean it looks bad necessarily. It's just like, it has a bad rhythm to it. It's a mess. It's just a mess. It's a messy movie. Let's move on to a movie that I haven't seen since the qualifying run. I meant to rewatch it because I fucking loved it. But I loved it. So it's one of those movies that it's stuck in my mind. I'm not going to forget the details. It was delightful. It's Perfect Days, directed by Wim Wenders.
Trailer tailor-made to get us copyright struck on YouTube.
Oh, yeah. I'll mute that one. We're going to mute that trailer to avoid being dinged by YouTube on that.
Thanks.
Perfect Days, Wim Wenders, a movie that the highest compliment I can give a movie, Mark. It reminded me of Patterson, one of my favorite Jim Jarmusch movies. That's just about, both those movies are about like being okay with like a smaller existence and appreciating what others might see as mundane, but you see as enjoyable. It's just a movie about a man cleaning toilets and going about his day. And yet it's so deep and moving and profound that I got goosebumps right now just talking about it. You watched it, I think, more recently than I did, probably. So take it away.
I watched it. Yeah, I watched it for, you know, the end of year consideration, all that. And I rewatched it to review it here because I knew I wasn't the qualifying run had passed by the time I got to it. So
you take this more seriously than me. It's okay. I'm just kidding.
No, no, it's fine.
14
it's
versus fine. 9. Okay.
We're doing two
proof is in the pudding. Yes.
I gotta write like almost 1,000 words on these things.
I know.
I need a bit of a recap sometimes. I also enjoyed it. And what it is that it does set up this routine. And that it's gonna sound dull, everything that we're gonna talk about, up to a point where it is this guy who cleans toilets. It's his daily routine. So you watch him getting ready in the morning, going to every single job location, cleaning toilets, having little like arguments with his younger coworker who doesn't take it seriously. And then going home, stopping at a restaurant, going to a bathhouse, reading. It's that for a while. And it sounds boring, but it's not, because you start to see all of these connections. I love, for example, the way that the movie opens with him waking up with the woman sweeping the sidewalk.
Yes.
And that happens a couple of times. And you realize like, this is his alarm clock. He depends on this woman that he will never meet, whose name he will never know, whose existence is just sort of in the backdrop, but he depends on her so much. And the whole film kind of gives you that idea of how we depend on people that we will never, ever know. And also what those lives could look like and what's behind those lives and what's going on. And it's just from watching this guy go through his daily routine. And then you start to see the routine break up a bit. And that's where you start to realize like, oh, he's really into music. He's really into reading. He has this whole past that I won't talk about because it does come up much later. But he has this family and this situation. And why is he cleaning toilets? And what is all of that about? I really like this film because of the way that it parses out information,
yes,
and then kind of upends it to just very subtle ways and in much bigger ways, so that you kind of start to think about all these bigger ideas about connection and about people whose lives are overlooked and all of this stuff that's going on. I enjoyed it. I can't say I loved it, but I really enjoyed it, and it's beautiful to watch. The lead actor, I'm sure I've seen him and stuff, Koji Yakusho, yes. He's great. he is just being. He is just being this character. He is living through this situation. He's going through all that. It's a fantastic performance. That I on a second viewing, I really overlooked the performance the first time I saw it, which is a shame.
But, well, I know why. You're distracted by how amazing the public toilets are in Japan.
Oh, yeah. We didn't even talk about that.
I don't even know how to describe it. Like, they're see-through until you get in one and lock the door, and then it becomes, like, you can't see through it anymore. And they're all colorful and beautiful. It would never fly in America. In New York, those things would be destroyed. There'd be glass all over the floor within 5 fucking minutes. They installed glass, like, screens at our subway station. They did not last, I think, an hour. They were destroyed. We can't have nice things. Anyway, it makes me want to go to Japan and just, like, use the bathroom. Seems really cool. Great experience. But it's this... so moving to me, just living a bare bones lifestyle, but he has those tapes that are of value. He has these cassette tapes that he loves, and he knows that he could get money from them, but he doesn't want to sell them because they bring him joy. And it's about just life's simple pleasures, like listening to music and, you know, going to the bar and getting your ice water every day, like just little simple pleasures. It moved me so much. And then you're it goes from being the Patterson-ian type of movie about that, exactly what I'm talking about, the musings about everyday life and stuff, and just being okay with a smaller existence. And then as you say, it gets more into his life and more melancholy in the back half, and it becomes something entirely different. And I appreciated both parts of it. I really, really loved it. I'm upset I didn't watch it again because it is what, like, if it should have been qualified for my list last year and I didn't put it on there, that's a mistake because I feel like it might end up on there this year if that's how the list works. I don't fucking know. Oscar qualifying runs really annoy me and I hate, especially like when I think Neon has one that's like Robot Dreams, we got a Oscar screener for. And that they just announced it's coming out in May. Like, that should be cheating. Like that.
I think the Academy has changed that now that it has to come out within like a month of the end, the start of the next year. I think next year it has to do that. Like, you can't just throw a movie in November in a single theater somewhere in New York and then put your movie out in March of the next year and say this is a 2023 movie.
And like why even do that?
I don't know.
Even fucking see it. Like, that's what's so aggravating. But anyway,
it is
different conversation. I love this movie. Seek it out. It's interesting because Wim Wenders, like, is that a blind spot for me? I've seen like Paris, Texas. I've seen Wings of Desire, but I haven't seen, you know, the dozens of other amazing movies he's allegedly made. So like, it's interesting because he's a German filmmaker, correct? And this movie is set in Japan. So I think it's just like worth noting because that's like interesting. Like, it's not a, you know, it's notable when a director makes movies somewhere else in a different language than his own. And that's worth noting. Wim Wenders has been making movies since what, the 70s? Like, he's an icon in film. Definitely check out some of his work if you're unfamiliar. Start with Perfect Days. It's awesome. I think it's like crowd pleasing too. I don't think it's like as, you know, artsy as he can get. Yeah, 4 stars.
Yeah. Oh, nice. 3 stars for me. But I mean, come on. It's I really, really enjoyed this film. That's
We won't dwell on the rating. What else were you going to say? You were going to say something.
I don't think I was going to say anything specifically, but I am as annoyed as you are about all that qualifying run stuff. It's
stupid. It's really
dumb. Also, this is also the weird thing. The studios are also very unopen. I guess they're closed off about when those qualifying runs are sometimes, which makes it seem suspicious.
Or like, where.
Did that actually happen? Yeah.
Like, I'll say it right now. I feel like a movie that got Oscar nominated... Flamin' Hot, which it did get Oscar nominated for a song because that Diane Warren wrote the song. And if you know anything about Diane Warren, you know, if she writes a song for a movie, it will be Oscar nominated. So they abused that loophole. But Mark, that movie doesn't appear to have had a qualifying run anywhere. And I think it's a scandal. And I do not think it actually qualifies. And yet it's nominated. So
they let that streaming loophole during the pandemic They closed that up. I thought that was the rule, but
Claim it got a qualifying run, but there's a guy, there's a Substack. I'm sure you also did the investigation yourself. It didn't play anywhere. I was in New York. Yeah. It didn't play here. It didn't play in LA as far as I can tell. It played a couple screenings, but it did not have a run.
Yeah. I like to try to keep up with when I cover them. I like to try to keep up. Did it have a theatrical run or not? Just for, you know, whatever. But
sure,
you know, because that's what sometimes then I know, like, am I going to cover this for the theatrical release or for the streaming release the next week? And yeah, Flaming Hot was one of those. I did not have any indication that there was a theatrical run. Anyway, this is all fun inside baseball stuff.
Really is. But let's move on to the next movie that was at Sundance. It's out on Hulu now. They may as well just call this fucking thing Sundance movie. It's called Sun Coast, though. A little different. Here's the trailer.
You want to be a normal teenager. I got news for you. You're not normal, Doris.
Who's Doris?
I am.
Do you think this is the right place for him?
You'd say that about any place. My brother's dying. He hasn't talked in years.
I'm so sorry. My wife passed away.
My dad died when I was 3.
Christ, it ain't a competition.
I think I should start sleeping at Suncoast so your brother doesn't get too lonely. He's my child. When he's in pain, I'm in pain.
I'm your child, too. What about
God's sake, give me a break.
You can come to my house if you need a place to party. My mom won't be there, and you can do whatever you want.
Oh, my God, I have to tell everybody.
Who are you?
This movie is as full of Sundance cliches as any movie I could possibly think of, but I think it works, and I think you agree. I haven't read your review yet, in complete honesty, but please take it away. What did you think of Suncoast?
I enjoyed it. I have some qualms about certain elements of the narrative that I think we both will have qualms about, and it seems to be if people do have qualms about this movie, it's probably the bigger picture it's trying to address.
Okay.
I found it very moving as this little enclosed view of what a mother and daughter relationship would look like if the mother and daughter have different ideas of what you're supposed to do when somebody is dying and how you approach grief and all of that that's going on here.
Yeah.
I think that relationship is the heart and soul of this film, and it 100%. Hit me really hard.
Me too. Hit me really hard. That's why I had to ultimately hand it to it, because like I found myself crying at a big moment, and I was like, oh shit, like this really, I keep using this phrase today, it really threaded the needle on making me care that, like, it's basically, you know, my dog is barking loudly. It's basically the thing that the son is sick, so the mom pays a lot of attention to the son and neglects his daughter. And there's a moment that happens late in the movie that addresses kind of that, and the mom realizing what that means for her daughter, that she's been spending all the time with the son, and it just hits you like a ton of bricks. And that is only because of what you're talking about. The relationship between Laura Linney, and the actress is Nico Parker, who I've never seen, or I don't remember her. She was apparently in the Dumbo remake with Tim Burton, and The Last of Us, The Game, Part 2, I guess she's in. But she was great. She was really
great. Yeah, she's great here. Linney is fantastic. There's a lot going on in that relationship. And it's doing three things. So it's doing that relationship in terms of the dying brother. It's doing a coming of age story where this quiet, nerdy girl who doesn't have any friends tries to make friends and has all of these people over at her house while the mother is staying in the hospice facility. And then it has the third thing. I'm cool with the first two. I'm really, really I'm really, really down with the central relationship between the mother and daughter. I think the coming of age stuff fits. I think it works because it is about how this character is approaching grief and also trying to evade it and just trying to live a normal life after spending years not having even knowing what a normal life is. I'm cool with both of those things. I think they work really well. The third thing is that the hospice center is also the exact same place where the Terri Schiavo controversy is going on.
Yeah, not that just the exact same place, the exact same place in time. It's happening.
Yes.
It's happening. This movie is also about Terri Schiavo.
And not convincingly in any way.
Well, That's what I, that's the one thing I said in my like one line Letterboxd log of this movie was, this is one of those based on a true story things that if it weren't allegedly somebody's actual life, you would call the writing contrived. And I haven't done the research like I did on Flamin' Hot to call out its bullshit. So I kind of took her at her word because I started thinking about it and I was like, well, think about it. There were other people at the facility where Terri Schiavo was. So it makes sense that someone who was there would like tell their story about what it was like to have their loved one there alongside Terri Schiavo. And then when I got that outside perspective, I was much more forgiving. But boy, it's handled clunkily. And I will say the movie in general, the like time period signifiers, it really just piles them up. It's like Terri Schiavo's happening. Brad and Jen are on the cover of People magazine. Anna Nicole Smith is on television. It just really, it's, that's what I mean by like, there's a lot of Sundance-y like box ticking things. And that's like one of them for me. But
yeah, here's a fun way to look at it. It is 2003 in this film, and this film is technically a period piece. So
yes, they can't wait to like play music from the period also.
Yep.
Constantly. What did you think of the Woody Harrelson?
Okay.
Angle?
Yeah. Okay. And this is where we're getting to. I believe there could be a bunch of ideas that could come into play here. You have Terri Schiavo, who's, you know, the controversy around whether or not she, you know, would live or has the right to die, live on a feeding tube in a vegetative state, or, you know, have the right to die as she apparently wished to. You could make some connections there. Like, why is that case such a big national outrage? But everyone is fine with everybody else is in the hospice center. Why is this different? What's the distinction here? You could come up with something around that. Instead, it's mostly just to get Woody Harrelson's character in, who's a, you know, protester trying to convince whoever that she, Terri Schiavo, should stay on a feeding tube and stay alive in this vegetative state. And he and the Parker character just talk. And I think the one saving grace of that stuff is that Harrelson's really good.
He's great. He's so nice. Yeah.
He's so good.
He elevates a lot of movies that aren't good.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't say this movie's not good, but I would say he elevates that role for sure.
Yes. It gives her a sounding board so she can talk about stuff that she can't talk about with her mother or with her classmates. So that's a good idea. And that's about it. That's really it. It does that whole idea of the protester and of the Terri Schiavo case. I don't know if it's real. I don't care if it's real. It feels contrived within the screenplay. And so it is contrived. It doesn't work. It's the least effective thing in this film, which is too bad because everything else about it is so good.
Yes. It ultimately works though, because you start to feel for Laura Linney's character just as much as you feel for her daughter. And you can, like, you know, she's been a mom of a sick kid for so long that like that's her only identity and it's all she can like function and think about, and it's all encompassing, and that has an effect on others, and it's her realizing that over time. And yeah, it works, but man, it really is just like, you know, Sundance movie with a traumatic thing. It just feels like a very, like, you could have made this on like an algorithm could have spit out something like this, but it transcends that because of the performances and the human element and the emotion that actually does come through. So I am giving it a 3. I did enjoy it.
I'm also giving it a 3. So
despite the issues. Yeah.
Despite the issues. Yeah. I think everything else about it is so strong. I don't care that it doesn't, as you said, thread the needle on the Terri Schiavo stuff. So,
yeah. Yeah. And like all the color of like, They get their bags checked because the Terri Schiavo thing's like ruining their experience. It felt so specific. I'm like, this has to be
that
true.
That stuff is really interesting. I like that idea. Again, like how these protests are affecting not just that life and the life of the family, but also all these other people who have to deal with all that stuff because of what's going on. Interesting idea. Doesn't play off though.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about this next one, which is also kind of frustrating, but we will maybe disagree about if it threads the needle. This is The Monk and the Gun from the director of, is it called Luana, the Yak in the Classroom? One of my favorite titles of, I believe, an Oscar-nominated picture.
Yeah,
is that correct?
It was nominated for Best Foreign Language Film. Yep.
Luana, the Yak in the Classroom. Again, The Monk and the Gun. Here's the trailer. I'll cut that one short because if you're listening, that's not a language you understand.
Well, maybe you do. We don't know how we're doing in Bhutan. We don't know.
Yeah, I haven't checked the Bhutan iTunes charts. I don't know if they have that yet. This movie's all about modernization and how they're going from cut off from the outside world to trying to be a part of it. And would you call this a satire?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. Yeah, because like it took me a while to realize it was one. I don't know what your experience was with this movie, but and I think I haven't read your review. I know what you rated it, but I think it sets itself up to be one thing and then is a different thing. And maybe that's why it ultimately is kind of disappointing. But I found it very engaging, but it did take me a long time to realize, oh, I think they're making fun of us, America.
Just a little bit. Just making fun of us a little bit.
I'm really slow to the on the uptick there. But yeah, this movie's interesting, and I'm trying to, I don't know how I ultimately feel about it. We'll work it out as we talk. So tell me about it.
So it is set in Bhutan in 2006, 2007, somewhere in there. There's some, the king of the country has abdicated his throne and his rule. He's going to hand the rule of government over to representative democracy. So people in a primarily rural country who have never even who don't need to understand the concept of democracy now have to be thrust into it. And so they have government officials going out to different areas, different rural areas, and teaching people like, this is how voting works. These are how political parties work. All this is happening. And then there's also the story of a gun collector who has come from the US, obviously, who has come to Bhutan looking for an American Civil War rifle. So there's that story going on. And then finally, there's the eponymous story, which is the llama of this small village tells his assistant, go find two guns. I need them for the event of this mock election. So those are the three big things going on here. And I found the whole thing with the guns to be dishonest. I'm just going to flat out say that. I don't think it worked. I think it tried to inject some suspense into the story that doesn't need it because it's doing so many other things with the election and how do you teach people and how people adapt to this modernization. Like the internet shows up the year before all this stuff. People didn't have televisions. There were no television networks in Bhutan until like a decade before this. How do these people adapt to that? That's the more interesting story. So to have this Buddhist monk, and that's the joke, is that it's a Buddhist monk looking for two guns. And the strong implication is something violent could happen here. And what does that mean? And I don't think that works. I think it just feels laying it on way too thick, this level of suspense, as if we're going to be bored with the idea of how an entire country runs and how the people react to that. And so we need that hook.
It definitely promises something that it can't deliver on by doing that, I think, ultimately. Yep. But like the stuff about how they're like being forced, democracy is being like hoisted upon them, like kind of forced upon them. It seems like nobody wants it. Everybody's fine with the king. And then you see how the politics starts to like ruin the lives of these people. Like they were so happy. And now that they have to like put themselves into groups and like fight for one side or the other, there's tension now. And like, it's interesting. It's an interesting idea to think about, like, wow, is democracy inherently the problem because we're pitting people against each other sort of thing. But yeah, you know, it's not a subtle movie. It's like early on when someone asks him, like, if he knows what elections are, because it's a foreign concept to them. And he goes, what does that mean? Like a pig disease or something? And then later on, they say that it is what, like, they make that reference again. There's a surprising phallus joke in this movie. It ultimately just maybe, it just kind of feels like not an empty provocation, but like a worthy provocation. That's a conversation starter, maybe, that isn't as wholly satisfying as its own thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it has all of those elements of the political satire going on. So I'm probably my favorite scene is where they're in the village and they divide the two groups. Like, this is your party. This is your party.
Yeah. Blue,
like,
red, and
you
got to
yell at each other, yell at each other. You got to be angry about this. Like, that's what we've been showing apparently to the rest of the world. Yes. This is what democracy looks like, is that it's just anger. And it does make you think. I mean, the film isn't anti-democracy, obviously, but it does have those. It is very anti a certain type of democracy, which I think has a lot to do with us, because you have this gun collector go to the country and he can get anything that he wants from a catalog. There's a lot of smart, funny satire in here. And I cannot express how disappointed I am that whole gun thing is going on and trying to make you think that something terrible is potentially going to happen.
Yeah. And I can't really argue against you being mad at that. I was less like, not like, moral, like, fuck you. I was more like,
no, it's not on a moral level. It's just on a narrative.
Yeah, exactly.
Thematic tonal level. It doesn't
work. I agree. It doesn't work. It's disappointing. If you're the person, if they got you with that hook of the monk wants a gun and why is that, then that answer will disappoint the fuck out of you, because it's not that interesting. It is just kind of a provocation sort of thing. So don't expect that to pay off. But I still like this movie. I thought it was very interesting to think about the idea of democracy coming somewhere and it being better and it actually making things worse. Like, I think it's really interesting to think about. I'm still ultimately 3 stars on it. I liked it, even though I have issues with it as well.
Yeah, I didn't hate it. I liked everything else that the movie was doing, but I'm giving it 2.5. So I'm right there on the fence with it.
All right. And let's, I think we'll definitely agree on this next one. Out of Darkness. Here's the trailer.
Panarashum. Tessin Baraffin and Susulardes.
We had to run.
Look at the good.
This movie really bored me. I'll start there. Remember the movie 65 that came out last year with Adam Driver? It turns out 65 meant 65 million years ago. Is that what it was?
Yeah.
This is like 45. It's about a long time ago. People that lived and had really nice teeth and spoke a language entirely of their own creation. The most interesting thing about this movie is it's people speaking an entire language they made up, and it's convincing, I guess. It made me think, okay, yeah, that's a real language. But what is this fucking movie? It's just kind of like a boring exercise that becomes more and more generic and derivative and like far away from what I thought it was as it goes. It's just like, oh yeah, it's just going to be like they're getting picked off by a monster sort of thing. I found this to be very disappointing and boring. What did you think? Even though it's very short, it feels long.
It's very short. I found it disappointing, not so much boring, I guess, because I was caught up in the whole building of the world and the building of the culture and the understanding of the society that would be like this 45,000 years ago. And yeah, I mean, it's impressive they made up a language for the movie, and it seems to function. It seems to make sense. I got it. It's like an anthropology experiment more than it is a narrative for a while, and I was kind of okay with that. And then yeah, just hey, look, there's a monster out in the darkness, and what are we gonna do about this monster? And what is this monster? And how are we all going to do the dumbest things ever? You can make the excuse at least that these people have never seen a horror movie, and so they don't know how to react in a horror movie. But I mean,
It's just, that's a cop out. Yeah. Just, I will not. I know,
it's the most cliche. Yeah. Like, yeah. I'm going to run into the woods and then separate from the group and chase this thing that I know is dangerous and deadly. Like, come on. You guys know better than that, even if you are, you know, early man in the Stone Age. It's frustrating that that is where it goes. Just generic cliched horror movie where the only interesting part about it is that it is early man confronting some unknown entity. And if we want to talk about movies not quite living up to their potential and kind of being dishonest a bit, where this movie goes is very dishonest once you realize, oh, this is what they're doing, and you spent the entire story telling us it's one thing and it's actually another. And there's an interesting idea there at the ending, yeah. But it doesn't, like, you just did the entire movie as a horror movie instead of trying to build this part up. So it just comes out of nowhere as a twist that it doesn't earn. Anyway, yeah, I wasn't bored. I was interested in it as an, you know, piece of speculative anthropology, I guess, and far less as a horror movie.
Wow, put that on the poster. A riveting piece of speculative anthropology. That'll really get asses in seats.
It will.
Out of darkness. Yeah, I can't argue that. I mean, really, it doesn't. That sounds perfect. It is speculative anthropology. It's set 45,000 years ago, by the way, not 65 million or whatever I was joking about.
Yeah, we would need to, if you were doing the joke, we need to do some sort of fractions that I do not feel like doing at this time of the
day. Yeah, no. When my jokes start to involve math, I bail immediately. So I guess it like looks good, right? Like they got the period stuff. I mean, not that it looks like it was 45,000 years ago. I don't know about that, but like the production design, it's good enough for the budget level. It's impressive. It's convincing enough, but man, I just don't, there's nothing to it. Like there's nothing to it. It's telling stories you've seen, but you've heard and seen before. And I have nothing else to say. It's one and a half for me, I think. No, two. It's a two. It's okay, just flat. Yes. It's just a flat thing.
Yeah. It looks really good. I think mostly filmed in Scotland, so lots of sweeping hills and murky skies and all that stuff. So it looks great, but two stars for me too, just because all that stuff that they did with the production design and all the language work does not make a convincing story.
Yeah, exactly. Let's talk about Molly and Max in the future. This was a pleasant surprise. Here's the trailer.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I got nervous.
That was.
I saw you walk
Wait,
in.
Max.
You know what? I don't have time for an autograph. You go ahead and take this one.
No, Max, it's me. It's Molly.
Molly. Oh, my science.
If you must know, I am seeing somebody.
Okay, that's great. Who is she?
She's actually my mecha partner.
You're dating a robot? All the Passionauts are together in one relationship.
I'm a level 7 space witch now.
I think you're in a cult.
I can leave whenever I want to. I just don't want to because I'm like super happy. Are we in a cult?
Yeah, definitely.
Can I just clarify? Are we going to sleep together?
You think we're compatible?
No. I mean, no, definitely not.
It is really not trying to be anything other than When Harry Met Sally in space, in a sci-fi future, but like a very lo-fi, very funny, very charming science fiction future. And it works. When Space Harry Met Space Sally is kind of delightful. You could also say it's Annie Hall inspired, and I suspect many people won't be on its wavelength, but I was. And I was laughing. I love the political satire. Like, one of my favorite Trump-style jokes I've ever seen, where the candidate is just like, I will be merging Earth with a trash planet that is my platform. And everyone's like, he doesn't really mean all that. And then he wins, and it's like, well, no, I'm going to do that now. I'm going to merge us with the trash planet. It's very funny. And the effects are all, like, cheap-looking, but, like, they get the job done, and they're kind of charming in that way. It's all funny jokes, and it's all funny world building, and their central relationship is cute and funny. It's Zosia Mamet from HBO's Girls and some other guy who has name I don't know. It's very funny and charming and cute. I liked it. What did you think?
I liked it too. I'm gonna push back a bit, Brett. I don't think the effects are cheap. I think all of that stuff with the green screen in the background, it is basically two actors on a green screen.
Yeah.
I really like the design of all those different planets and dimensions and everything that's going on. Yeah, it's all green screen work, but really good.
It looks better than like Quantumania.
Come on then. It does. It looks a lot better than some of the Marvel stuff green screen work that we've been seeing lately. And that says something because this probably had a 20th of the budget. Oh, there, we started doing math already. But yeah, it's really, really low budget compared to that, and it looks better than that stuff.
Yeah, all I was trying to say is it's cheap, but it doesn't look cheap. You're right. I should have highlighted that. It looks good.
Really good. But yeah. I really like this idea of just having this familiar romantic comedy play out while all of this other nonsense and insanity about futuristic politics and the black hole death of the entire universe. It's like something comforting about the fact that like this far into the future, we're all going to be still arguing about the same thing and still going through the same stuff. And it's comforting, and it's also a little unsettling. And I think that makes it quite good. But as a romantic comedy, it's a lot of fun. I recognize some of these actors who are in the background. There's a lot of comedians. Post-credit stuff showing that a lot of the dialogue was improvised, and you can kind of tell, but it is all really funny because I think everyone is invested in the joke and everybody gets that this is a absurdist satirical futuristic world, so they're playing that up. It's a lot of fun. And Mamet, and it's Aristotle Athari is the second lead. They're both really good, really charming, really funny. There's some imaginative stuff in terms of world building, those dimensions. That one thing where they get the box where they can create a parallel timeline where they can see if the relationship would work out. That's such a good joke. And it plays.
There are so many good jokes in this.
So many.
I wrote down one that like, oh yeah, magic is real. It's just about, you know, magic is a result of exposure to toxic fumes as a kid. There was actually a huge class action lawsuit about that, about all the magic people in the world. All that stuff is funny. The world building's funny. And as I think it was my friend Jesse's wife says in her letterbox, this movie gets at very honest things in extremely silly ways and manages to pull it all off. And I think that says better than anything I could have written about it. Her being in the relationship with Mobius or whatever, the floating head with tentacles and this weird sex that they have. It's so funny.
He's gaslighting her the entire time in that monotone voice. It's so funny.
Yes. It's so funny. Like the evil politician who wants to merge Earth with the trash dimension versus a woman who has eczema, so nobody supports her.
But she doesn't have eczema.
She doesn't even have eczema. She's proven it on television. Yeah, it is genuinely like, I was laughing out loud the whole time. I didn't expect anything of this movie. And I was delighted by it. So very strong recommend 3 stars for Molly and Max in the future. Taking very, you know, tried and true rom-com tropes and filtering it through something entirely new and exciting. I thought it was great.
Yeah, 3 stars for me too. Definitely worth checking out. It is. I saw a trailer for this before, you know, a big release movie. I was not expecting that. So it's got some sort of theatrical release. So be worth checking out.
Absolutely. Let's move on to the next movie, which is called Marmalade. It has nothing to do with Paddington. I apologize. Not a prequel. Nothing like that. Here's the trailer.
Let's rob a bank.
Do what now?
They cannot get away.
Once upon a time, I was just a wee boy. Worked at the post office.
I done asked you for 6 months to chop that frickin' Yeti off your head. Get it gone.
Then, girl of my dreams.
Marmalade, you wanna show me around or what?
From now, we was inseparable.
My mom, they didn't raise the price of her medicine overnight.
Mark, what is Marmalade?
It is a twisty thriller about a kid, young guy who meets the girl of his dreams, and they decide to rob a bank because his mother is sick and the prescription drug costs went up. And that's about it. That's as far as we can talk about it.
Well, yeah,
it's what the plot is doing, because oh boy, does it just start throwing twist after twist after twist at you.
Yeah. In a way that isn't convincing, I will say. No. It just made me laugh at it and not with it. Is that where you are on it for the most part?
Yes and no. I found it more dull than laughable. And okay.
Yeah,
it's dull. I don't know what to say about that part of it. But what I will say is I did find the humor going on in the background of the story. So the main guy, he's played by, I should know his name, Joe Keery. He's in Stranger Things. He was just in the most recent season of Fargo. He's really good in Fargo. I just caught up with that recently, so I have to shout that out. He's in prison after this robbery, and he's talking to his cellmate, played by Aldis Hodge. And I just like the bickering between the two of them, like Hodge's character telling him to hurry things up. Don't, you know, this is a short story, basically. I'm going to get bored by this story if you keep it up. I like that stuff more than I like the story
really?
Being told.
I thought that was so cliche and annoying. Yeah, it's just like the typical wraparound. Like, yeah, the guy's telling a story to someone in prison and that's what we're seeing. But of course, you take a zoom out and then it's actually not what it seems. It's not all that interesting. And it's all kind of predictable. And then once it starts throwing twists at you, it's like, well, now it's predictable because I know anything can happen. And it's going to do this dumb bullshit. I just thought it was really dumb by the end. And to be clear, this is written and directed by Kier O'Donnell, who is famously the weirdo brother Todd from Wedding Crashers, who plays Tummy Sticks with whatever the characters. That's a joke he makes. I don't remember who he says it to. But weird actor guy making his, I don't know if it's his first or second movie. But it does feel like one of those actor made a movies like Clark Duke's Arkansas or something. It feels like there's a type of movie that actors make. And this is definitely one of them.
Pull that one out of Arkansas, because I now you said it, I remember it.
Yeah, no, because it's the same type of thing. Just a random comic twisty, actor making like a twisty thriller. Crime movie. Yeah. It really did nothing for me. Like he starts realize, like it's like a Bonnie and Clyde type thing, and he starts to realize that the girl might not be telling the truth because she's lying. And the way he figures out she's lying is she says she doesn't have a sense of smell, but she can smell his farts. I'm like, this movie's stupid. It really just did nothing for me. And by the end, I was just actively like throwing my hands in the air, like this is just so fucking stupid. 1.5 stars for me for Marmalade. I feel like I said nothing about it, but I have nothing to say about it.
It's hard to talk about it because it does rely so much on the twist that you don't get to know these characters except how they're placed within the story and how their roles shift and how all of that fits into the plot. It's not about the characters, and I think that's what makes all of that storytelling so dull. But I did laugh at all the stuff going on in the cell and commenting on the story itself, because yeah, I found the story to be kind of boring too. So I laughed along with that. I'm giving it 2 stars though, because I think the performances are really good. And, you know, as predictable as everything is, I kind of appreciate the fact that it does try to subvert your expectations, change your expectations enough that, like, okay,
at least it's not the most threadbare version of what it could be. Like, it's just like, okay, there's a bunch of elements we're gonna try to surprise you with. I guess there's that, but it doesn't really work.
It doesn't. No, I would definitely not say it works, but it's 2 stars for me, so that's where I'm at.
All right, now let's talk about, I think this was a Sundance movie either this or last year. I think last year. Cynthia Erivo is in it. It's called Drift. Here's the trailer.
This site dates back to the 5th century BC. We take a few minutes, look around, and then we'll head up. Oh, careful.
Barbarians.
Where are the parents?
They fled. I'm Callie.
Jacqueline.
Don't look at my face.
You're not Greek.
No, American.
When it's all over, you might.
Where are you from?
Liberia.
along the way, I feel I must.
Mark, tell me about this movie.
It's the story of a woman who is in Greece and she is without a home. She is just, well, as the title implies, she's drifting from place to place, just looking for money, way of food, any kind of scraps that she can live off of. She sleeps in a cavern by the sea and she just kind of hitches rides on different shuttles and tour groups. And that's her existence in the present tense. And then there, you get these flashbacks that start to reveal what her actual story is. She seems, you know, it seems to be telling the story of like an undocumented migrant or something along those lines. But I really like the way the movie plays with assumptions like that, where you think her story and her character are one thing, and then you realize like, oh no, it's not. And how does that change my perspective of her as a person, as a human being of worth? And should it have changed any of that? I think that it is trying to get at this bigger picture of like just people who are living in uncertainty and all this stuff. And if we can appreciate and understand that this woman deserves something because of her specific situation, what does it matter? Shouldn't we think of that for everybody in a situation like this? Yeah. Shouldn't we care for all these people? I think it's getting at a broader political point and a broader humanistic point, despite the fact that it is telling this specific story. And I think it tells that specific story really well too. So I like this movie quite a bit.
I also did. Did you note that this was the same filmmaker who made a movie we both really liked from this year already called The Breaking Ice? Anthony Chen, same director as that movie we reviewed a couple weeks ago.
I didn't blown know
away.
That. Oh,
I know. I was blown away to discover that. I was like, I knew that name looked familiar. And we both like that movie, too. So we clearly like the films of Anthony Chen. Anyway, I agree with you. It is a very specific story that is absolutely getting at trying to tell a story of migration and immigration. And like, it's trying to, I feel like it is like a sympathetic portrait of this is what people are going through. If the people who come to Greece or US, Europe, wherever the fuck it is, from wherever they're coming from, there's a reason they're coming here. There's something they're escaping, and maybe you should have some sympathy rather than a blanket mind policy in your mind that says we should be closed off to these people. Like, there's a reason these people are coming. They're gonna be murdered if they don't, in some cases. Her backstory is very harrowing.
Yeah,
it doles it out in a way that, you know, could be considered exploitative, but I think the movie has a good handle on the character and it doesn't feel that way. I think the relationship between Cynthia Erivo's character and Elias Shawkat's character is really nice. You can tell that she's like, you see at first that she's lying about her situation, pretending that she has like a husband and is well off and not the homeless drifter that she is. She lies and says she's a journalist and stuff like that. It's just a movie that I think is meant to kind of prod the viewer and be like, if you have, you know, preconceived notions about migrants in your country, like maybe have a heart, be human about it. But, you know, the people who need to see this movie will never see it and their opinion will never change. But
that's the unfortunate part of it.
Yeah. But no, I think it is very good and it is doing all the things you said it's doing. And the performances are great and it's worth seeking out. Anthony Chen, guy to watch.
Yeah. Erivo is fantastic here. And I really like.
Oh, it is Erivo. I always get it wrong. Erivo.
Oh, I don't. Okay.
I said Ervio. Yeah. I switched the I and V.
I thought you said it. Okay. I think the second time you said it right, though. Anyway,
okay.
Point is, she's great. She's always great. And she's great here. And I really like the way that her story unfolds. You said it could be seen as exploitative. I think the fact that it is, she owns that story. She owns it. She is in control of. Except for the fact that she's, you know, going through PTSD, so she doesn't have certain control over reactions. But in the telling of the story, like how she tells the story, why she tells the story, who she tells the story to, and the circumstances of that, they're all under her control. And so I didn't see it really as exploitative. I found that moment when she finally does reveal everything that happened really powerful, just because she is allowed to own it.
It's sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like this movie a lot. It was very, thought-provoking. 3 stars for me for Drift.
Yep. 3 stars for me too.
And that's the end of the movies for this week that are out today, Friday, February 9th. There are several more on markreviewsmovies.com, but we have one movie to talk about that's out next week, and it is Bob Marley, One Love. Let's get right into it. Here's the trailer.
Don't let them fool you.
It's a hit.
Oh, no.
Reggae is the people music.
You know you're a superstar.
I am a superstar. You can't separate the music and the message. You see, reggae music comes to unify the people.
Not everyone likes what you're saying. For your own safety, you need to stop.
At first, Mark, I really thought this movie was going to avoid the typical biopic pitfalls, because the movie starts and Bob Marley's already an established artist and person. And I was like, okay, so we're going to skip all the, he hears the notes of the famous song that we know he's going to write as a child, and then he writes it. We're going to get that all out of the way. It's not going to happen. Nope. This movie just does it all in flashback, and has a structure that, I don't know if it struck you as this way, Mark, very clearly aping Bohemian Rhapsody and trying to just like plug in Bob Marley to that movie, because that movie was such a huge hit, almost made $1 billion, I believe. And they just want that formula to work again. And they tried with Bob Marley, and it's very awkwardly structured, I think, because of the way it has the concert at the beginning and there's a concert at the end. But I don't know. I found it to be very poorly structured. The story it's telling, like a strange way to start it and frame it. As great as the music is, it just manages to hit every branch on the biopic trope tree on the way down, despite good performances and a commitment to the accent, the patois, whatever you call it. The Jamaican speak in this movie is so strong, and I don't know if it's accurate. I'm just some white guy, but it's so strong that I very much missed a lot of the dialogue. I would have appreciated subtitles, and I know the movie is clearly aware of this because it makes a joke about that fact at some point. And I thought that was really funny that they acknowledged it, but also funny that they said, fuck it, who cares? No one needs to understand what people are saying in this movie that is just full of cliches. What did you think of it?
I found it very cliche too. And the structure, I don't think it's necessarily the structure that's off, but you did make a very good point about the fact that it begins and ends with the concerts, and the concerts are very political. The entire introduction of this movie is all about Jamaican politics. It's all about there's unrest, there's violence, there's upheaval, because these two different political factions are battling it out on the streets and in the ballot box. And it doesn't establish exactly what's going on.
Not at all.
It doesn't make it clear. No. It doesn't say anything. It's just Bob Marley there holding a concert for peace in Jamaica, and you never understand why all of this is happening. You don't understand the greater context of it. And I think that's the issue, is that it's trying to do something bigger and also just saying, you know what, though? Forget about it. That nobody wants to know about this stuff, even though we're going to make a big deal about it at first. He's almost murdered. He and his wife and his manager and all of his bandmates are almost murdered over the politics in this movie. And it doesn't care about the politics. It's so weird that it doesn't do that.
You know what
it
does care about, though? That
what?
The dreadlocks stopped the bullet from killing his wife, which is such a crazy detail. It has to be true. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Otherwise, it's like ludicrous that they would put that in the movie. So it's crazy. But go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. Oh, no. I'm saying that like it does all that stuff at the beginning and the end, and then the rest of it is all that regular old biopic stuff of going to the recording studio, sitting around, and you hear something like they're listening to the
Exodus soundtrack
to Exodus, and like, oh, Exodus, that sounds like a good name for a song. They start coming up with it,
and I love that song. So like, I'm still bopping my head while they're making it, but I'm laughing also. I'm like, they're just doing it. Like,
they are.
At this point, you can call it like walk harding. Like, they're walk harding right now. Like, they're doing it. And it just does it all over the place. And I don't know how many people know why Bob Marley died But the movie, I mean, it gets at it and it talks about it, and it just makes you I don't know. It's one of those things where you're like, we're celebrating this. Like, that's a weird thing to go out that way.
Yeah, that's a weird detail to throw in. It needs to be in there, but it's a weird thing to throw in.
It makes me think, like, that guy, like, I think he's a genius and brilliant, but like, fucking cut your toe off and save your life, my man. Come on. Fuck. I guess it's a spoiler, but it's a real life spoiler, so I don't care. This movie is impervious to spoilers. Like, what? It's just, you're watching Bob Marley exist. It's exactly what you think it is, right? Like, it's just a biopic with all the scenes you'd expect. The record executives being skeptical. You've got the little Gandolfini showing up in there. It really is Bohemian Rhapsody, sub in Bob. I really was struck up top by, as you're saying, like, they're almost murdered. It's like the opening scene. And I'm like, this is a biopic frame I've never seen. Like, he's almost murdered, and that's going to inform the rest of the movie. And it's just like, nope, just going to have the typical biopic stuff now occur in flashback, and then occasionally have a good musical number on stage. Not very often either. Like, I would say there's not that much music in this.
There's a good amount of music. It's just not always, you know, performed live or anything like that. It's just always on the soundtrack. And I was, you know what though? Here's what it is. I was annoyed by the formula. I was annoyed by the fact that it is avoiding all these bigger issues. I didn't hate the movie though, because I'm watching it and I'm like, I'm kind of invested in just this relaxed attitude that comes across from the character and from the narrative, where it is like, once you get past the political stuff, it is really kind of like a hangout movie where he's just with his bandmates and with his managers, and they're talking about all this stuff and the music plays. And I'm like, you know what? Okay.
The music played. I never wanted to like storm out and leave. Like, I totally do in movies like this, because I'm just like, yeah, the music's fine. Kingsley Benadire is good as Bob Marley.
Good.
Lashana Lynch is good. Is great. But the movie is just the formulaic thing it is, and there's nothing to the filmmaking that makes it stand out at all. Like, that is what I was struck by. Like, the fire, the flourishes that it has, like the flashbacks, whatever the fuck it is. Like, none of the visual ideas are interesting in it. There's nothing, like, I don't know, say what you will about Elvis, it's visually interesting, I guess. I don't know, man. It just is exactly what a movie like this is now at a studio, like at the studio level. It just has to hit all the beats. And by the way, it's one that's produced by the family. It's family sanctioned, so it can't get into anything too risque, and it definitely cuts corners on stuff. And God, I was really this is probably his philosophy, but I was like offended at the movie's about unity, right? That's his whole thing, is preaching unity. So they have a ham-fisted scene where he comes face to face with the guy who shot him. And it just made me laugh so fucking hard. It is so ridiculous. It's stupid. It's fucking dumb. It's not a good movie, but it's not the worst thing you'll ever see. It's like a respectable 2 stars for me, but it's not good.
Yeah, I'm going to give it 2 stars too. And I kind of wish it had gotten a bit more into the philosophy and the religious aspect of it, because it's so clearly part of his life. It talks about Rastafarianism a little bit more detail than you expect, but not enough that you kind of understand where he's coming from. And also, like you said, it was produced by the family, which I find odd, because it hints at certain shortcomings of him as a person.
That's
like
another
the affairs.
Yeah, and biopic cliche though. Just classic one.
It is.
Yeah. Infidelity. Yep. And like the wife just kind of knowing it but not talking about it. Like, it's all there.
It's all that stuff. It just feels so part of the formula. And that's exactly what's wrong with it. And there's so much potential to this story, just from the political angle and from the philosophical angle and all that stuff. But again, I didn't hate it. So I'm giving it 2 stars. Yeah. If you like Marley's music, and who doesn't? I mean, it's not a terrible way to experience it, I guess.
Yeah, but it's like, far from the best way to experience it also.
No,
it's like,
I mean,
such a it's tough to get a handle on for some reason. I don't, like, the way the movie's structured also. It just feels like rushed to get to, like, I appreciate that it was pretty short, but like, it also feels rushed in a lot of ways. And like, it's another movie that kind of just is like scene to scene, rather than like, there's a cohesive narrative here. Yeah, it's about what do you expect from this type of movie. So Bob Marley, One Love. Go ahead.
You'll see a lot of stuff that you'll want to learn about after the movie's over.
Yeah, you'll be like, is that really how we died? That can't be it. Like, unfortunately, maybe it is. Yeah. All right, so that's out next week. Look forward to that, I guess.
It's on Valentine's Day, just to point it out. We're covering it early because it comes out on Wednesday, so it's in the middle of the week.
If everything comes out Wednesday, we can just drop the episode Wednesday if we're ready. Is that true? Or is there,
oh, no, it is not true. Friday? No.
Oh, okay.
It's only
never mind.
And, yeah.
Madam Web. Is Madam Web a Valentine's Day?
Madam Web's got that weird screening / embargo deal going on, so I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Right on. All right. Well, we'll be back next week with the aforementioned movies we just talked about and more. Alien Ant Farm, take it away.
The show starts in one.
Shut up. Ush.